This is the Ultimate Attorney Podcast, the podcast for small law firms who want to create a thriving legal practice. Each week, we'll uncover the ways that you can improve your referrals, your marketing, and your business operations, helping you to generate more revenue and elevating your life and your law practice. In each episode, we'll tap into some of the closest guarded secrets from industry titans, thought leaders, and legal specialists. We're glad that you've tuned in. And once again, it's time to help you become an ultimate attorney. Welcome back to the Ultimate Attorney Podcast. My name is Dre Redfern.
And this is Alexis Neely.
And in this week's episode, we're going to be covering a topic that's going to be really close to home for those solo attorneys, or maybe those individuals who are just considering hanging up their shingle and starting their own law practice. Yeah. And that is your first year as a solo.
Yes, your first year as a solo is such a big deal because it's a make it or break it time. And I remember when I was going out on my own, it was 2003. I had just given birth to my second child, realized there's no way I can go back from my maternity leave, and I'm going to have to figure out how to hang my shingle in my little town of, I was living in Hermosa Beach, California, and you know, the whole South Bay community, Redondo Beach, Torrance, Manhattan Beach. I wanted to figure out how to practice law there. And I had a four-year-old as well. So my daughter and my son, and my husband was a stay-at-home dad. He didn't have any income coming in, and they were all dependent on me. And I was looking at the idea of leaving the six-figure paycheck. And the scariest part about it, Dre, was even though I was making, I think back then it was $185,000 a year. I was going to be a fourth year associate, so looking at $185,000 a year. We weren't saving any money. So the idea of going out on my own was pretty terrifying because how was I going to be able to do that without having any money in the bank? And how was I going to replace this $185,000 a year that my family was depending on? We were using all of it. And yeah, it was super, super, super scary. We had bought a house. So we had a house in Redondo Beach back when you could still get a little two-bedroom, one-bath for $350,000. Those were the days. We thought that was so much money because we had come from Florida where, you know, houses were like $150,000. So we were like $350,000. But Todd's mom had died. And when she died, she left him $35,000. And so that was just enough for us to do a 10% down payment. And then we had our mortgage payment. I think total we were paying something like $1,800, $1,900 a month, maybe $2,000, $2,200, something like that for the mortgage. And where in the heck was the money going? But, you know, taxes were taking half of it. Then, you know, the firm set up a 401k for me. So I had money going out to retirement. And what was left in the paycheck at the end of the day just didn't feel like that much. Didn't feel like that much. In a way, that kind of made it easier to go out on my own, because I didn't actually feel like I needed to replace 185. I felt like I needed to replace 10,000 a month. That was my first milestone when I went out on my own, was, oh, if I could just get to 10,000 a month. Oh, and then I should be able to get to 10,000 a month pretty easily. I'll just engage four clients at $2,500 each. And that will be 10,000 a month. And that should be easy enough to do. So it was on that basis that I went to the law firm partner I was working with and I said, Steve, I'm not coming back after my maternity leave. I'm going to launch my own practice. And he said, you're crazy. He said, don't do it. You need at least three more years here before you know what you're doing.
You'll never make it.
You'll never make it.
We'll see you in 18 months once you've given up.
Yeah, that was pretty much how it was. And I said, thank you very much. He was actually the first of several older men who would tell me something similar. And he told me that, and he said, no way, you can't do it. And I said, thanks, I'm going to do it. And I went and I found an attorney who had been in practice for something like 30 years doing estate planning. So I'd been doing estate planning at the big law firm, you know, and I had been commuting an hour each way to downtown LA, and I just couldn't do it and have a second child. And when I looked out into the future at what was going to happen, I could see the path was like, I was going to end up becoming of counsel for a big law firm, getting paid for part-time work and working part-time. And I was like, no way, not going to do it. And, It was a big shocker to me because I never wanted to be an entrepreneur. I never thought I was going to hang my own shingle or go out on my own. So I found this lawyer who has been doing estate planning in the Torrance community for 30 years. And I went to him and I asked him if he had any extra office space and if I could trade him my time for the rent. Because I didn't even have any money to pay rent. You know, rent was going to be $2,000 a month in this high-rise building in Torrance, the top floor, the, you know, kind of the penthouse suite of buildings in Torrance, California. And he said, yes, he was really thrilled to have me. He said, I could have the extra office. I could use the receptionist. I just needed to give him 20 hours a month of my time. And that sounded like a great deal to me. Sure, it only came out to $100 an hour, but I didn't care because I didn't have any money. So that was how I made the leap into my own practice. I didn't know anything about being able to use credit or that I would even need to invest in my practice. I thought for sure I'd just be able to get enough clients to pay for it, you know, to pay for everything that I needed. And I didn't know anything about hiring people. I didn't know anything about how to get clients. I did have a couple of clients that came with me from the big law firm, and that was really nice. That was great. That floated me for a while. And then I had to figure out how to bill my time and how to send out invoices. That was all really interesting. But ultimately, what I ended up finding, Dre, was that the most important thing, none of that was actually the most important thing. The most important thing of the most important thing was learning how to get hired by clients for a flat fee.
It's funny how that happens. You know, there's you could have all the aspirations in the world, but if the phone's not ringing and you're not making sales, then that business has a shelf life on it.
Exactly. And somehow I made the connection in my mind where I said, okay, four clients, $2,500, that's $10,000 a month. Then I can support my family. Then I could support my family. And that became the driving force and the driving factor for me. It would take me quite some time to learn how to engage every client I met with. We, you know, had a prior episode that we talked about intake and engagement systems, and you can listen to that one. It's a really important one. It took me a long time to figure that one out. But once I got it down, gosh, the practice became so much easier and less stressful. But I always had that in my mind right at the beginning. Four clients, $2,500 each. Now I just have to figure out how to go out and get those clients. And once I did that, once I was able to start doing that consistently, my next goal after that became $25,000 a month, right? So my first goal was 10. My second goal was 25. Once I hit 10, I knew that I was going to get to 25. And the only way that I knew that I was going to get to 25 was because there was another lawyer in a neighboring community about 50 miles north on the other side of LA, Thousand Oaks, and she got to 25,000 a month. And as soon as she got to 25,000 a month, I was like, oh, if she could do it, I could do it. If she could do it, I could do it. And yep, so I got to the $25,000 a month. That was the next one. But again, it was tied into a specific number of clients at a specific average fee. Because if I could anchor to that kind of clarity, my nervous system was able to relax. And then I could focus on all the other little things that came along with starting my own solo law practice. But by the way, most of which I didn't do right in my first year, I did really wrong. In fact, I did them really wrong for most of my law practice until I ended up selling my law practice to the wrong person in the wrong way because of having made these mistakes. So the first one was I should have incorporated my law practice right away. I should have incorporated right away. Or at least
why didn't you?
I didn't because my accountant that I hired a CPA, and this CPA, you know, I'm sure she meant well, but she was like a lot of lawyers in that she wasn't truly a trusted advisor or counselor. She was a tax return preparer. So when I went to her and I said, Carrie, I know that there's some, you know, financial reports I should be looking at and I should be looking at them in certain ways. She said, well, it depends what you want to know. But I didn't know what I wanted to know. And when I went to her and I said, Carrie, should I incorporate my business? She said, oh no, there's not going to be any tax savings for you doing that. But she didn't even ask the right questions to know. She didn't ask me what size of law practice I was building. She didn't ask me if I planned on hiring any people. She didn't ask me what my goals were or what my end game was or what I was trying to create. She just assumed I was going to be like every other lawyer that she knew who wasn't making any money and, you know, was maybe making less than $75,000 a year. And therefore, no, there's not any benefits to incorporating. She didn't ask me the questions she would have needed to ask me to know that I was building a real business. And so had she asked me, what she would have heard is that actually I was building a business. And once you get over around 100,000, 75 to 100,000 in revenue, there's actually huge benefits to incorporating your business, not just from the liability perspective. You know, in her mind, oh, well, you can't protect yourself from liability with incorporation if you're a lawyer because your professional services aren't covered by the liability of a corporation, which is true. But as soon as I hired my first person, now I would be protected from liability from any lawsuits from that person. She didn't even ask me if I was hiring anybody. So that was crazy. And then the, you know, once you get over 75 to 100,000 in revenue, you actually want to be taxed as an S corporation and put yourself on payroll. Pay yourself a small salary of $2,000 to $3,000 a month. You'll pay self-employment taxes on that salary on your $2,000 to $3,000 a month. And then you get to take out the rest of your profits in the form of distributions, which are not subject to self-employment taxes. That ends up being a huge savings. Huge savings. It could save you $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a year. So she could, and the funny thing is that she was doing my taxes, so she saw where I was going. So 2006, 3 years in, I hit my first $1 million of revenue. November came around of that year, and she said, you know, we should probably take a look at your tax projections here. Turns out I ended up with a $100,000 tax bill. Trey, I hadn't put the money aside.
Oh, that is painful.
I was not handling my financials properly at all. Did not know how to do it. Did not know the right questions to ask. That April of 2007, I borrowed $115,000 from the bank to pay my taxes. That in and of itself was a bad idea. I should never have borrowed the money from the bank. I should have done a payment plan with the IRS. But you know, these are things I just didn't know about the business end of business. I had to make these mistakes. It's actually something that we teach our lawyers so that they could teach their clients, because you know, lawyers need to know this. I was a lawyer. I didn't know this. And yet I was serving business owners. I was serving business owners to set up their business entity, but I didn't know anything about business. My accountant was serving business owners to do their taxes, but she didn't seem to know anything actually about business in a way that she could counsel me and guide me. So, you know, as a result of having made all these mistakes, these are the things that we teach lawyers who are serving business owners to actually be able to counsel their business owner clients about, because it's shocking that we don't know this. We don't learn this in law school. You didn't learn anything about legal, insurance, financial, and tax matters for small businesses. So yeah, you really should, I think, incorporate right away, unless you plan to make less than $100,000 a year. And why would you be planning that? Because if you're making less than $100,000 a year in your practice, you can't afford to hire anybody, and you're going to be working all hours of the day and night to try and get to that $100,000 a year. That's not the kind of life in law practice.
And that's, you know, assuming that you're not really going to have rent or computer expenses or anything else, which you will.
You will, of course.
And that $100K is pretty
insurance.
Quick.
Yeah.
That's one thing I was going to mention is that, you know, if you're just starting as a solo, you know, having spent 12 years in the liability world and having, you know, 8,700 law firms annually insured as clients of ours, there are so many great resources that you can turn to when it comes to insuring your law firm as a solo in your first year, where that liability policy may only be as little as $500. Maybe it's $800, $1,000, give or take, but in that range, which is very, very affordable. And then you can actually set up prior acts. We talked about this in the previous insurance episode, you know, maybe 10 episodes ago or so. So many things to actually like lock this down. So even if you were to go in the future, you're still protected back to this point. So if you haven't listened to that episode, go do it. I would say that's definitely one thing you do from the start, because it's not like your homeowners and like your auto policies. It's very, very different.
Yeah.
The second thing would be is find out what every attorney in your particular market, area, practice, geographic region is doing, and then do something completely opposite of that. Because I guarantee you, if everybody's doing it, it's probably not working that well. That's just the general sort of rule when it comes to most lawyers and professional services, is that if you hear them doing these things or see them, it's often not a wonderful idea. And so, you know, find whatever that differentiation may be for you. Just as a simple example, one of my clients in our media agency is a financial advisor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's financial advisors are like attorneys. They're a dime a dozen. They all claim to be different, yet very few actually are. Not like our ultimate attorneys here, Allie. And this particular financial advisor saw the opportunity in the market. So instead of being a regular sort of run-of-the-mill financial advisor, he's a dream architect. And it's a trademarked process. So you can't go copy. You can't go knock it off, all of these sorts of things. But who would you rather turn to if you're looking at it on an even playing field? Are you looking like other financial advisors or a dream architect? And it's the same thing in the legal field. So would you rather go to some other attorney down the road or some attorney who is the whatever it is that you may be doing in your area of practice? Such a game changer as far as how you create that differentiation. Find out what everyone else is doing and do something different just like that. But also get a really predictable lead gen system for your business. We've talked about literally no less than half a dozen, if not a dozen at this point in time on the podcast, of different ways that you can generate business inside of your firm to get to that 10K a month quickly and easily. Now, Allie, you mentioned it earlier, but how long did it take you to go from making that goal of 10,000 a month to actually hitting it?
Oh gosh, so long ago. I'd have to remember that now. I think in my first year of practice.
Yeah.
In my first year of practice, well, definitely in my first year of practice. So because I started in August, you know, my first year of practice actually spanned 2 years. So my first year of practice, gosh, I'd have to look back, but there's no question I cleared 100,000 in my first year of practice. I was trading my time for rent with this lawyer that I was working with. And I wouldn't be surprised. I think I got to the 25,000 a month goal within my first year of practice.
I love
it. And I was going to say that, by the way, that to me, the minimum that you want to be shooting for as an attorney in practice for yourself is 250 a year. That's the minimum. That's if you're working part-time. That's if you're working from home with one part-time team member. You want to be shooting for that 250 a year. And you want to make sure that you understand how many clients you need to engage at what average fee, not charging hourly, but charging significant enough fees where you're delivering a service that you really believe in for you to be able to get to that 250. Because you've got a service that people will pay for. It's not like you are a hairstylist or, you know, who's charging $50 for a haircut. It is not like you are, you know, a plumber who's doing a $150 house call. You have a highly valuable service that people are happy to pay for when you know how to work with it, when you know how to make your law degree your most valuable asset. It doesn't mean you're going back to school to get an LLM, by the way. I was just on one of my Facebook groups where, you know, I'm on these groups with women who chat with each other, and this woman made an anonymous post and she said, should I go back and get my LLM and spend $100,000 and be away from my kids? And I'm over 40 and I'm like, oh my God, no, don't do it. That's crazy. You have everything that you need right now to be able to provide a phenomenal service to families and or small business owners in your community. And they will happily pay you $3,000 to $5,000 for an estate plan that actually works for the people that they love. And the documents can be easy for you to create. It's the counseling that you get to do and that they're happy to pay for, and that and the way that you create relationship with them over life and actually make sure that their family is going to stay out of court and out of conflict. And, you know, oftentimes I feel like I'm beating a dead horse here with this, but if you think about it, $25,000 a month, if you're at an average fee of, let's say, even at the low end, that $3,000, you know, that's only 8 or 9 clients a month, 8 or 9 new clients a month. You can do that, especially with these lead generation strategies, you know, that Dre has been talking about. And if you know how to intake the clients. And so I think a lot of lawyers in their first year, Dre, get bogged down focusing on the wrong things. I know I was. I was like focused so much on what did my logo look like, although it did turn out to be a nice logo, you know, and yeah. Like what did my website look like? And that was ultimately important. The website was ultimately important, but I had so much stress and worry about money when what I should have been thinking about in my first year was how to get hired by clients that I enjoyed serving, where I knew I could provide the best service to them possible that they would be happy to pay for. And I could explain that to them. And then I could go out and start educating my community so people would actually want to hire me. And if I just focused my first year on that with some of the fundamentals, like, for example, malpractice coverage, and like, for example, you know, a simple website where people could just like go and make sure I was a real human, a real lawyer, you know, yeah. You don't have to have all the bells and whistles built in at first. You're going to do that once you've got, you know, you can engage, once you know you can engage clients, because think about it this way. If you're bringing in $25,000 a month and you only need to keep 10, you've got $15,000 a month to invest in growing your practice, in your website, in your marketing, in hiring a great team, in your technology and your systems, right? So what I want to do is see you get first to that, knowing that you can engage clients at a sufficient average fee where they will be happy to pay you. And you're going to be able to deliver a great service. And you don't have to be at that $9 a month to begin investing. You just have to know that you know how to do it.
Yep.
You just have to know that you know how to do it. Once you know that you know how to do it, now you start investing in what you need to do it more. And that's where the marketing comes in. And that's where the hiring people comes in. But first, your first year, get the you know, trade office space with another lawyer for your time. You don't even have to pay rent. Get your malpractice coverage. Get your letterhead. And start learning how to engage clients. And clients you love to serve.
And that right there is probably the simplest way that you could start your first year as a solo. Mm-hmm. Don't overcomplicate it, because then it becomes analysis paralysis and then nothing occurs. You know, cover your bases, hang up your shingle, focus on those lead gen strategies. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, then the rest of these things will fall in place. You don't need the $20,000 or $30,000 website yet. You don't need all of those things. Your logo, no one really cares about it. You're exactly right, Holly. Mm-hmm. And it's just such an important thing, is that when starting out, do your best, don't overcomplicate it. And I think you're really going to then tee yourself up for success as an attorney.
Yes, you are. And you'll be on track to becoming an ultimate attorney. And we will be back again with another episode of the Ultimate Attorney Podcast. Looking forward to seeing you there.
We'll see you all next week. Hey there, Dre Redfern here, and we appreciate you listening to this week's episode of the Ultimate Attorney Podcast. Now, before you go, I have three quick things for you. Number one, if you're not already receiving our free premium content, then go to ultimateattorneypodcast.com and register on the right-hand column to receive all of our best free resources. Now, when you do, we'll send you access to our next level law firm bootcamp, which is a 7-day video series to help you reduce the stress of running your law firm, create more revenue predictability, and sell your services with greater ease. And it's all completely free. All you have to do is visit ultimateattorneypodcast.com and register on the right-hand side. The second thing that I have for you is that Ultimate Attorney is going to be hosting a live 2-day event in Dallas, Texas on May 2nd and 3rd, and I would love to see you there. During these 2 days, we're going to walk you through our 6-part process to help you level up to create a 7-figure law firm and show you how you can radically scale your law firm to meet your goals. We're also giving away more than $2,000 worth of free templates, resources, and implementation plans to help you level up your law firm from the moment you leave the event. You're going to love it, and I would love to see you there. So for more information and to register, simply visit ultimateattorneylive.com. Number three, and finally, we don't monetize this podcast with ads or sponsors. So the best compliment that you could give us would be to rate us 5 stars on iTunes. And when you do, you'll be entered into our monthly drawing to receive one of our 3 courses that Ali and I offer that are valued between $1,000 and $3,000. So don't miss out on that opportunity, and we would greatly appreciate your share and your 5-star review. So that's all for now. Thank you again for listening to the Ultimate Attorney Podcast, and we'll see you on next week's episode.